Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. Dear friends, we have said this before, but it bears repeating. Reality is entirely consciousness-based. All of reality exists in a range of consciousness vibrations, from the lowest, which is perceived as fear, that's what we feel it as, to the highest, which is perfect love. The more you and I will use our free will to make loving rather than fearful choices, the better we and all the world will be able to elevate our planet away from hatreds and wars and toward universal love. And the fear of death really is the base fear. I've found that once we lose our fear of death, basically we no longer fear anything, not even the mortgage payment. Last week, our wonderful friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan, talked about how we can ease our loved ones during their transition that we call death, isn't really death at all, of course. And to follow up on that, this week, I've invited Kelvin Chin to join us. Kelvin is a fascinating man. He has written a delightful book that can help even people who are having trouble believing all the afterlife evidence to overcome their fear of death. Kelvin's book is called, not surprisingly, Overcoming the Fear of Death, and it's delightful. My friend Kelvin is a man on a mission. Welcome, Kelvin. I'm so glad you're with us today.
Thanks, Roberta. Thanks for having me.
Now, you and I, Kelvin and I live in the same city, so we've shared lunch and conversation, and I've gotten to know him a little bit. And Kelvin, you have a fascinating history. Would you tell us a little about it?
Sure. So I started meditating when I was a teenager, about 46 years ago. So I've had a lot of experiences with myself, turning within, so to speak. And I've been teaching meditation as well for about 43, 44 years now, thousands of people worldwide. But I started getting into helping people with death and dying issues about 30 years ago when my mom passed away. And it really was one of these life-shaking movements within oneself, and it really was something that I had to personally grapple with, and I started helping people many years ago from that point on.
But even going back farther, you and I actually have some things in common. I went to Smith College, which at the time, it's a seven-sister school. And at the time, it was like going to an Ivy because most of the Ivies were all male. And you went to Dartmouth, right? And then you went to Yale Law School. Well, I went to law school, too. So we have kind of this serious background that has led us, I think, to have both of us wonderful careers. But it also opens your mind quite a bit. Don't you find that true as well? You had such a broad education that it kind of exposes you to ideas that otherwise you might not have been aware of.
Yeah, exactly. I went to Dartmouth undergrad, graduate school at Yale, and then Boston College Law School. And like you had a flirtation with the legal world. I think you practiced a lot longer than I did, but I got it more into the corporate side of things, working in law firms and helping run law firms and so forth. But I think you're right. It kind of gives you a certain perspective on the world. Of course, you got to put food on the table, and
yes.
It brings a certain business mindset to it. And along with that, I think what I found that's very helpful in my work with death and dying, and also, quite frankly, teaching meditation, is that combination of being comfortable with oneself inside helps inform and helps translate some of those experiences externally to people who may only be used to, or may be more used to, thinking more rationally from what you and I may refer to from our past history as our legal and business backgrounds. So I'm a big believer in talking about all of the things that you and I are interested in and feel important in a way that's understandable and practical to people.
I think that's such an important point. I know a number of people who are experts in my particular field of the helping people overcome the fear of death. And what I love about your book is you found other ways to help, which is terrific. But many of them can't communicate what I know are actually fairly simple ideas and make them make sense to people. That you're so right. Communicating is a separate, very important skill. And I wasn't always able to do it, and you probably weren't either. It's something that we have to learn.
I started probably when I was 18 years old giving lectures publicly about meditation, which I learned way back then. But as you say, it's a learning process, getting up in front of people and explaining it in a way that makes it easily understandable to them. I mean, you and I and others may have had experiences and teachings taught to us by great teachers, but translating that in a language that's easily understandable to others, as you say, is another skill set. Which comes through experience and trial and error and what works and what doesn't work. And when you have a lot of life experience under your belt, I think you do get a little bit better at it.
Yes, and talking to people helps. Practice makes perfect. When I first began to talk about all of this publicly, which was only less than 10 years ago, I saw a lot of puzzled faces in the beginning in my audiences, and I realized it was my problem and not theirs. And the simpler we, these are all simple concepts, everyone. There's nothing about it is complicated. It's different from what we're used to in many cases, but it's simple. Now, I give you a lot of credit that you can meditate. I've tried. I can't do it. And everyone I've ever talked to who loves to meditate says, you just haven't tried hard enough. Well, my at this point in my life, I don't have the time to start to try. But that's obviously an important skill that in doing this. Is this something you advocate for people, that everyone should learn to meditate?
I think it's a really valuable tool, experience, technique, process, however you want to look at it. The key element that involves that's involved in the way I teach the meditation is that there is no trying. There is no need to put effort into meditating. That's a key distinction because, as you say, most people are thinking, oh, I can't clear my mind of thoughts, or I can't concentrate. Yeah. I can't focus. And my whole thing is that's not necessary. Now, there are most of the techniques out there do involve that, but the way I teach it does not. And that is something that I learned from a great teacher many years ago. Like I said, when I was a teenager, I studied earlier with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and I think that was one of his greatest gifts. I would argue his greatest gift to the world was that teaching and learning and practicing of meditation can be easy, can be effortless, if the teacher understands how the mind operates when the mind is meditating, which is different from what I call the supermarket aisle mind that we all have when we're walking down the supermarket aisle. We're like, do I need peanut butter? Do I need bread? Do I need what?
One of the core things about this book is it talks about four main belief systems about death and dying. And I'd like to ask Kelvin to address what those are, because this is a remarkable insight, and we'll talk about it in this segment. What are those four belief systems?
Sure, Roberta. First of all, what got me to think about these four belief systems and coming up with these four belief systems was, as I mentioned, 30 years ago, I started helping people with death and dying issues. And what I found was that a lot of the discussion ended up around having conflicts about beliefs within a lot of cultural or religious issues. And as you know, even Buddhists don't agree on all the various forms of Buddhism. So I thought, you know, how can we talk about death and dying in a more open fashion that circumvents all the religious and cultural beliefs? And so I came up with these four beliefs that really underlie the many religious and cultural beliefs in the world. And so the four beliefs are this. First belief is the physical science belief, which is my brain and my mind are connected. And when I say mind, by the way, you could substitute the word consciousness or soul or spirit or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
So all the same thing. So
yes.
So mind and the brain are connected. And when my body dies, my mind shuts off. That's the first belief system, you know, the physical science belief. Second belief system is my mind will continue after my body dies, but I'm afraid of what may happen. So the fear could be due to any number of things which we talk about, but it doesn't matter. There's fear of continued existence, I call the second belief system. The third belief system is my mind continues after my body dies, but no fear. And I may transition to some place, and different people may label that place different words, but there's no fear. Fourth belief system is my mind continues after my body dies, and I can make choices. I can choose to stay on the other side. I can choose to come back in another body and have another lifetime. So it's the idea of past lives, future lives, reincarnation. That's the fourth belief system. So everybody falls somewhere there, and they may have hybrids. You may have, like, somewhere in between. People have, like, oh, I have a little of this one, I have a little of that one. That happens, too.
Yeah, right. So when you give a talk, you basically go through these four, and then what do you, just briefly, what do you tell people about each of them? How do you help them sort of get past
sure.
the issues?
Right. So what we do is we talk about these four belief systems, and actually I'm giving a talk this Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock at one of the libraries here in Austin, Texas, the North Branch Library. But what we talk about is the four belief systems, and we look through the lens of each of the belief systems to help people reduce and eliminate their fears. Because if we think more clearly through each of those belief system lenses that I just laid out, we can reduce and eliminate fears. And I'll give you an example. So the first one, the physical science belief, the belief that my dad had, and I talk about this in a little bit more detail in my book about my dad's belief about this. But the idea is that, well, first of all, what's fear? Fear is the emotion caused by the anticipation of unhappiness. So if we are fearful about death, we are fearful about anticipation of unhappiness that will occur after our body dies.
Oh,
well, if that's
okay.
the case,
right?
Right. If that's the case, then you have the first belief system that my dad had, belief system that when my body dies, my mind shuts off. It makes no sense to be fearful of death. Because when my dad believed that his body died, his mind's going to shut off. There's going to be no experience after his body dies. Therefore, it makes absolutely no logical sense for him to be fearful of death. Now, my dad understood that. And so what does that mean? That means that he lives his life fully in the present, which is the goal of all reduction of fear, isn't it? Is to
yes.
live life more fully.
To free
so
you to do that.
He did. He did. He did do that. Now, what I find working with, you know, thousands of people around the world, 20 different countries now so far, doesn't matter what religion, people will still have that, think they still have that first belief, but still be fearful of non-existence or whatever afterwards, how they describe it. Well, what happens there is I point out to them that they really don't just have the first belief. They have at least all or some of the second belief system. There's a fear of continued existence, even though they say they believe that their mind is going to shut off. They don't really believe that because there may be some uncertainty, and that's understandable. And so we help them work through that.
Okay, what do I get emails, a lot of emails now. I spend part of every day having to answer them and enjoying it, actually. It's a gift that people reach out to me, so I always make time for it. But I hear sometimes, especially from young people, who are terrified to die and be extinct. Their fear, I don't get these sort of terrors from people who are older, so I think it has to do with, but I haven't even started, and if I'm extinct, I won't get to do the things I want to do. I heard from a young man who said, I don't have a girlfriend, I've never had sex, and I don't want to die without having sex. I mean, that kind of specific fear. How do you help them?
Yeah. So what, and by the way, I have worked with very young adults, 17, 18 years old, all the way, you know, there's no upper age limit, but you're right. It is quite amazing how many millennials have reached out to me from around the world, different cultures.
Yes.
With somebody who has a fear like that, regardless of what their age is, but especially when they're young, because if we can help them, imagine what a full life they will have ahead of them for the next 60 or 70 years. But the way to deal with that, one of the key components, in addition to understanding a little bit more clearly what the thinking is that's going on, is experientially, the second prong of the approach is experientially turning within. And by turning within, and it's through meditation technique that I teach, or they can find some other process that works for them. It doesn't have to be my process per se, but I encourage people always to find something that's easy and effortless, that works, that helps them turn within, that helps them flip on the opposite of the fight or flight switch in their nervous system.
Wow, how interesting.
And so that's what I teach. So the technique that I teach does that. It turns on automatically the opposite of fight or flight. And the fight or flight, of course, is the adrenaline. It's the heart pumping. It's the focusing of the mind to survive when the saber-toothed tiger was outside our cave door, right? Well, that's not appropriate when you're in a traffic jam or when you're in a long line at the bank. But that's what happens to most people in our world today. The fight or flight gets turned on way too much. We need to turn on the opposite switch. And so learning how to do that reduces the anxiety, increases the flexibility of the mind, increases the patience, and reduces the fear. That's
well,
the critical component that's missing.
This is fascinating, and I'm glad that at least there's some way to help them. Kelvin, let's get on to the third one of the kinds of fears that you help to address, or belief systems, rather, that can cause fears. And that's the one I'm used to. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the third belief system is the one where people are comfortable with after they die. Their mind continues and they're comfortable. There's no fear associated with their anticipated experience there. And people will, they'll label that different ways. They may call it heaven. They may call it nirvana. They may call it various things. And I leave it to them to decide how they want to label that. And then the fourth belief system is one where we talk about past lives, future lives, reincarnation. So we can chat about that more if you like.
Yeah, I mean, to me, these are kind of two related views, because in both cases, there is something after death that they have either been taught or have studied and learned to believe is true. And there are variations. Most people, for example, nowadays, who have studied the afterlife evidence, understand that something like reincarnation does happen. So they're kind of, these are two are kind of blended in my mind. And as you say, both of them, we won't say there's no fear. There's always fear of what you aren't absolutely certain of and you can't see in front of your face. I think the fear of death won't disappear for any of us till we see our loved ones at our bedside. But the loved ones that we thought were dead. But these are, nevertheless, I think, important belief systems to kind of look at further and better understand what about them will alleviate and reduce our fears. Yeah, talk about both of them, because as I say, I think that they really fit together. And yeah, talk about past lives, because that's something which I have trouble teaching some people, despite their Christian background. Yep, it does happen. Talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so first with regards to the third belief system, the belief that the mind will continue but there's no fear afterwards, like you said, there still may be some related fears. There may still may be a related fear, fear of uncertainty. There may be still some fear of eternity. Sometimes people have that fear, and I talk about that in my second book, which I'm about halfway through writing right now. But bottom line is, I would say one nugget about the third belief system, would be that, as you and I have discussed at lunch and at various times, and I know that you discuss this on your shows, you know, the mind continues after the body dies, let's say. Well, what mind are we talking about? It's our mind continues. So that means that I think that there's almost less distinction. There still is, quite frankly, a significant distinction between this side and the other side. But I think something needs to be said about there being less distinction between this side and the other side from a mental standpoint. In other words, we don't lose our mind all of a sudden when our body dies. It's our same mind that's continuing, but in a different way. And so yes. I think that level of comfort needs to be emphasized to people so that they don't feel like while the while it will be different because we don't have a body, we still have our own mind. Our personality continues. And so let me just segue from there to the past life question you asked. I think that's been my experience. I started having memories in my mid-20s, and I talk a little bit about it in the book, but mostly in my book I want to talk about other people, so I talk about other people's past life experiences a lot. But my experiences started in my mid-20s, my memories, and what I have noticed, having remembered over 20 different lifetimes now, some details about 20 different lifetimes, is that my personality has stayed pretty much the same. It's changed somewhat, but the basic fundamentals of my personality have stayed the same. What does that mean? My mind continues. It's my same mind taking on different forms, living very different lives, sometimes as a slave, sometimes as a whatever.
Right.
But experiencing life in a different way each time through that lens of that particular life, so to speak.
So profound. Exactly.
Sense.
That's been exactly what I have learned in my own experience and observations. But now you say you recall these lifetimes. Wait, was this spontaneous or as a result of meditation? How did you recall them?
Yeah, it's interesting. The first time I remembered, the first one came to me in a dream. And I wasn't sure, you know, you have dreams and sometimes you have very clear dreams. But is it a dream or is this a real memory or what? What happened was I was walking with a close friend of mine and he finished the experience before I even started telling him the experience. He told me about, and then we started recounting memories that we had of that lifetime with each other, which were really, it was kind of third party, kind of very unanticipated, let's just say. And then I started having memories after my meditation, just lying down and resting, which I always recommend after you meditate. I was lying down resting. I wasn't asleep. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't meditating. And I wasn't fully wide awake. I was in that partial in-between wakeful state.
Yes.
I started having memories. And in that particular lifetime, I remembered things culturally that I had no awareness of as Kelvin Chin in this lifetime, that I later looked up in an encyclopedia and found out, this was before the internet, found out, like, what? Really? And stuff that I had never studied and didn't know. And so, I'll tell you what it was. It was the word Saracen. So Saracen, people think of Muslims as a word that we use today. That's a recent word, I found out. It's a recent term that started around 1300 A.D., we started calling people who studied, you know, Islam, Muslims. Before that, they were called Saracens. My memory was as a crusader and calling them Saracens. And I had no idea what Saracens was as Kelvin Chin.
Many of you know that my current primary guide was quite famous in his next to last lifetime. And I had studied, even before I, 2 years ago, met Thomas, my primary guide, I had studied that prior personality of his, so I knew it pretty well. And then I came to know my guide. And what's fascinating to me is they're basically, as you point out, Kelvin, they're the same person, only quite different in some ways too. The primary personality was Thomas Jefferson, and he was such a prolific writer that you really can know him very well, especially in his early life. He was a lot like Thomas. I mean, both of them intellectually, extremely ruthlessly honest and curious and kind of impatient and idealistic people, intense people. But Jefferson was a milder guy. He was a gentler guy. One of the things he said was, take things always by their smooth handle, which is 18th century speak for, you know, go at things gently. Don't go at things in a straightforward, in your face way. And that's how he actually lived and governed when he later became a president. But my Thomas has all that cleared away. He is as intense a person as I've ever known. Same basic characteristics, but as Suzanne Wilson, with whom we communicate, says, this man does not suffer fools. So I see, Kelvin, that's the same guy, but different in some ways. And this is, of course, between his lifetimes. I guess we're getting him as he really is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's been my experience as well. From a personality standpoint, how I may have expressed my personality, how I express it now as Kelvin Chin, how I expressed it when I was a slave, how I expressed it at various times in these various forms, may be slightly different. I may be more intense at certain times, in a sense. I may express the energy in that slightly different way, as you're describing with Thomas. Yet it's the same fundamental underlying personality.
Yes.
For example, I have a very strong affinity and, let's say, passion for protection of women and children. That's something that is a theme that's gone through many lifetimes of mine. Not all of them, but many of them. And there's something there emotionally that has made me very protective of women and children, and that's something I'll get into in one of my other books. Why I think that happened. But the other thing is, I have a passion for understanding things, and again, it has expressed itself in very different ways in different lifetimes. But there is a passion, an emotional need almost, you could say, passion to that degree, to understand things. But back to the past life thing, what I'm kind of alluding to here is what I find valuable out of this is learning more about myself. Otherwise, who cares? It's cocktail party talk, past life
right. Stuff.
Who cares who you were, what happened here, whenever? It doesn't really matter. What matters is I'm living life now as Kelvin Chin, and does this memory inform me about who I am more today so I can live my life more fully in the present? It's always, for me, about living in the present. And how has that informed me? For example, I talk about this one in the book, the Carthage memory from 2,300 years ago when I was a slave and I almost died in a battle in the Mediterranean. But the will of the strength of my mind to keep my body and my mind living, and I survived that experience, has helped me today as Kelvin Chin when I've gone through difficult times in my life, which we all go through, and it's helped me adapt and be flexible and power through, in a sense, those difficult times as Kelvin Chin.
Wow,
no practical
that's
effects.
Such an amazing insight. I think a lot of us wonder about details of why we feel and think the way we do, and there's nothing in this present lifetime that seems to have made us want to be that way. And that, as you point out, is one reason it makes sense to look at what your past lives might have been, because that may be where those tendencies began. But to find that it was strength from being a slave that gave you the strength you have today, I think that's an amazing insight.
Right, exactly.
Many people a lot of people are obsessed I find I don't much care about my other past lives. A lot of people are obsessed with them and learning more about them. And I just would caution people, because most of us have had mostly crummy past lives. We learned from them. They were important past lives, but we were slaves. I did regression once, and the two lives I got were I was an old male Egyptian slave about to be killed, and I was a youngish Cro-Magnon type, and my village was about to be overrun. And in both cases, I didn't even want to find out what happened next. It isn't necessary. Most of human history, life has been nasty, brutish, and short, as they say. And those were your lives too, and mine. I think it's extraordinary that my guide had that lifetime as someone, probably one of the greatest people who ever lived. But he doesn't think of it that way at all. To him, he's just disappointed with some things about it, and he doesn't. He won't talk about it with us very much at all, which I find surprising. People don't care as much as you would think about their lives, even if they were called Cleopatra or someone else famous. So keeping perspective.
I think if we keep it in context, and if we are in fact eternal beings and our minds continue for eternity, that is beyond time and space, time-wise, yes. Let's say. So yes. That's what eternity yes. means. Well, if that's the case, then Thomas, you, I, we have and will have trillions of lifetimes, more than trillions.
That's right.
So in that context, it's all about living in the present. It's all about learning more about ourselves now. Whether we are into past lives or not into past lives, it doesn't matter. Living more fully now is not dependent on remembering one's past lives, but
not
if
at all.
One does, one should use them on a practical level, is my opinion.
And Kelvin, where do you try to get people to arrive in the end? What is it? Because you take them from wherever in the four core beliefs about death they might start, but where do you try to help them end up if they stay with you and learn from you?
Yeah, the idea is to get people to reduce and eliminate their fears about death and dying, or other fears they may have, quite frankly, that may be related fears to death and dying, because there are many related fears, fear of losing loved ones, grief over having lost a loved one, those types of things, to get them to a point where those fears and concerns are no longer overwhelming them, that they become manageable, and therefore the person can live their life more fully now in the present. That's the goal. That's the objective.
So the ultimate goal is to free people from whatever fears are tripping them up so they can live more fully in the present. Well, that is I think that's like the biggest goal. That's my goal too, because that's really what it's all about. I mean, our lives are brief. They're full of learning. And if we aren't concentrating on living them to the full, we're not going to take advantage of all the learning opportunities, and we won't make the most of our lives. So this is wonderful, a wonderful kind of tune-up for most people, especially as they get toward the middle of their lives and they've lived some and they have a lot more of living to do. And at that point, you know, fears build up. Clearing them out is very important. And for that, I really recommend Overcoming the Fear of Death and working with Kelvin just in general. He's a very delightful guy in person. All right, let's talk a little bit about meditation, which I've been teasing throughout the hour, which I can't do. So I so admire people who have been doing it forever and can even use it to evoke past lives. Can you just tell us somewhat briefly what it is that... I mean, I remember Maharishi, I remember him,
right.
And the Beatles and all of that. But what is it
right.
that he does that's different?
So difference is that it's effortless, it's easy, there's no focus, no concentration of the mind involved. And so it's done sitting with the eyes closed for about 10 or 15 minutes each time. You do it twice a day. But the key is that it's an easy process, that it does not involve clearing the mind. The first thing people usually say to me is that they want to learn meditation. They know it's going to be good for them. but they cannot clear their mind. So the first thing I'm always saying to people is you do not need to clear your mind. You do not need to push thoughts out. You don't need to focus on anything in particular. But the key is, then what do you do? So that's what I teach people. Because everybody knows how to get to point B. Everybody knows that point B is, oh, I want to be at peace. I want to be more centered and all of that kind of stuff. But how do you get from point A to point B? That's the key. That's the trick. So that's what I teach. Now, I've moved away from Maharishi's organization, the TM organization and so forth, which I still think is a great doing great things, but I moved away from them because they started getting a little bit more into other things than purely meditation, and I stayed purely with the meditation process. And so the other thing that I did was I removed all the cultural and religious trappings and overtones from the teaching. So what I teach is completely non-religious, non-culturally based. So it doesn't look like, it doesn't feel like anything cultural or religious in terms of the teaching or the practice, although it's incredibly spiritual because it's turning within, ultimately allowing the mind to experience itself in this different way. And what happens is the mind lets go. The mind lets go to itself in this different way. The body relaxes and releases stress and strain, turns on this opposite of the fight or flight mechanism internally. And then hormones balance, neurochemistry changes, all the blood chemistry changes, and so forth. I was one of the first test subjects involved in the United States in 1970 in physiologic experiments done by Herbert Benson, who's a cardiologist in Boston. A lot of people may remember who he was. And Herb would hook me up and about 50 or 75 other people, and then the results were published in all the scientific journals in the early 70s. And there was a cover story in Scientific American magazine and so forth in 1972.
Wow. I guess there are a lot of different good results to come from meditation. And the key is that it needs to become part of your life, but it can't be that the sort of your life can't revolve around it. My own husband actually has been doing meditation ever since, and his name is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. I said it. See, I had trouble saying it before. When he first learned about transcendental meditation, he started doing it. He's been doing it every day ever since for half an hour. I don't think he gets very deep, but he says that it balances him. He was a doctor and then retired. He had a very stressful career. So there are a lot of reasons to do this. And it seems to me to be something everyone should do. And we're running out of time here. So what I'd like to do is have you just tell us a little bit about your foundations, just briefly, and how people can reach you.
Sure. Yeah, I have two nonprofit foundations. One is called turningwithin.org, and that's obviously the website where you can reach that one. And that one is focused more on the meditation. And the other is overcomingthefearofdeath.org. And that's my foundation that helps people with death and dying issues. So it's just the words all spelled out, overcomingthefearofdeath.org, and the other is turningwithin.org.
If people have questions, can they reach you through those websites? Or what's your email address,
exactly.
Or how can they reach you?
Exactly. Yeah, the best place is through the websites, and they can reach me through the contact page on each of the websites. And on the footer of each of those websites is a link to the other website. So if you can't remember what the other website link is, then you just go to the bottom of any of the pages, and it links to the other website. They're connected.
Well, I'm so happy that you've been with us today, Kelvin. I love it when someone is able to expand what I know, too, and you've certainly done that. So thank you so much, and we will have you back. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it's really going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be N. Riley Haggerty. He has written what I think is a fascinating book about the Bang sisters called Portraits from Beyond. You've never heard of these two, but Elizabeth and May Bangs were extraordinary physical mediums during the heyday of physical mediumship in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And Mr. Haggerty's book is going to bring them to life for you. You're going to be amazed at what people were able to do then that they cannot do now. Please join us next week. This is going to be unforgettable. This week, our guest has been Kelvin Chen. Kelvin's obsession is teaching everyone to overcome the fear of death. And if you're going to have one life's purpose, I cannot imagine a better one. He does it beautifully. His wonderful book is called Overcoming the Fear of Death. I'll say it again, dear friends. Once you no longer fear death, you will no longer fear anything. I promise you that. And so really, by learning to overcome the fear of death, you can settle into the joy of eternal living right now, and you can make the most of your life right now while you're here, before you finally get to figure out what really does happen. It doesn't matter for now. Now we're here for living. Meanwhile, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. All my books are available from bookstores on Amazon and now as audiobooks. And they're also being made available, believe it or not, in 33 additional languages on Amazon platforms worldwide. If you ever want to talk about any of my books, please contact me through my website. I'm always happy to hear from people, answer their questions. And if you don't like something, I'm happy to hear that too. Of course, recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. Seek Reality is available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net, love those people, and on iTunes. For information about where you can find Seek Reality, to read my blog, if you'd like to do that, I hope you will. I put a lot of effort into my blog and we get a lot of good comments. Or if you simply would like to contact me about anything or just say howdy, go to robertagrimes.com. There's a contact box there. I answer every email. It's my joy to do that. So please do, if you feel like reaching out, don't hesitate. Dear friends, I really am so grateful for your particular friendship. Working to raise the consciousness of this entire planet is very heavy lifting, isn't it? But it's joyous that we can do it together. And what Thomas says is, together we prevail. And that's something which is more and more I'm certain, it seems to me, we are going to succeed in changing the world forever for the better, and the only way we can do it is together. So thank you so much for being part of this journey with me. I appreciate everything about hearing from you or not hearing from you or just knowing you're there. You make me smile. Meanwhile, my dear friends, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, which is getting better and better. And please know that you are a powerful, eternal being. Know this every minute of your day. You're powerful, you're eternal, and you are perfectly loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.